talk to Dad.
Hello and welcome to the Talk to Dad podcast, episode 196. I've got Will here with me.
Hello.
And a very special guest. We have Elizabeth right here in our home.
Hello.
How are you?
Kind of a guest. Is she a guest or like a returning?
She's kind of a special guest. So almost a week ago, on Easter Sunday, you came and visited us.
Yes. And I'm here again.
And it's a little strange to have visitors. I've got to say, you're the only person who's visited us since we've come home from Italy that's actually like entered our home.
Yeah, that's true.
But you're a member of the immediate family, so I think that makes it okay. How's it been, Elizabeth?
You know, a little stir crazy. I've been going on walks pretty much every single day. I'm glad that I have somebody living in the house with me.
Yeah, I always think that. In fact, it seems like every time Mom and I go for a walk, I tell her that, like, I'm so grateful for my family right now, and I'm grateful that I like my family.
Yeah.
That's very true.
People that live alone and are sheltering in place would be extremely difficult, I think. Or if you were living like in a bad situation, like you live with your family, but you can't stand your family, or it's a...
That has to be the worst right now, honestly.
Because you get no break from them. Yeah.
But for some people, it's just like them and like two parents. I feel bad for those people.
Yeah. Or, you know, people who just, normally they hang out with their friends all the time, so it's not a big deal that they're living on their own, but, you know, suddenly it's in lockdown, and I don't know. I always think about that, like, it'd be so rough, having, like, no real live social interaction. I guess you can, you know, you can Zoom or FaceTime people, but it's just not quite the same.
Yeah. Mom. I have found myself, like really craving like a lot of really small interactions.
Yeah.
Like I miss just like, you know, making small talk with like the cashier at Kroger or whatever, or like just talking to your neighbors. Like when, like, especially cause I live in an apartment complex. Like I see them like coming in through the gate all the time and just making small talk. And I see a bunch of my neighbors walking their dog and like, I can't go up and pet their dog or anything.
Because Maisie will die.
Well, I mean, at my apartment complex.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've noticed the same thing. Like when you're walking around the neighborhood, like you see a neighbor and I always make a point to like to wave and be friendly. But at the same time, it's like they're crossing the street to avoid you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like you're the least person. It's like everyone's the least popular person.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can wave at them and you can even maybe talk to them very briefly, but you really can't stand there and just talk and chat like normal people do.
Yeah. The other day, I made a whole bunch of cookies and we delivered it to people at the doorstep. And we just like had conversations with them from like 6 feet away.
How was that? Was that good?
That was fun, actually. That was really fun.
Yeah. I know that's something that you were kind of looking forward to and Mom had suggested.
I've thought about like making cookies and delivering them, but I don't know if people are going to be like suspicious of like food safety type stuff.
Yeah. I wonder about that a little bit too. Like sharing your food with people. If people would feel like, oh, I don't know if I should be eating this. On the other hand, those same people are probably getting like DoorDash every other day.
We're secretly like opening a cabinet and getting our like coronavirus bottles and just like
just loading, just spooning loading
some
up.
Into there.
No, we're not. We are not.
Don't for expose us on the podcast like this.
Yeah. We quick.
Should I talk about my teeth or is that too weird for the podcast? Do you think?
And to be specific, you're not talking about the teeth that are in your mouth right now.
No. The ones that I just
about
like
the
have.
Teeth that you own and carry around with you.
In a little baggie, yeah.
Yeah. Provide us some context, though, please.
I was planning on it.
Wait, can't I talk about my teeth first?
Because unless you're the tooth fairy, it's very creepy to carry around teeth
so
with you.
So to clarify, they
Even
are
if
not.
If you're the tooth fairy, it's a little creepy.
To clarify, they are not real human teeth, they're ceramic replicas of teeth. Turns out you can buy like replica teeth that look realistic enough to be disturbing online because like dental places will get models that have like realistic teeth to like either show people or to practice on or, you know, whatever dentists do with fake teeth. I don't know. But when they fall out of the model, they'll sell them on like Etsy. And apparently there's a large enough demand for that.
do they sell them directly, or is there like a wholesaler involved, like someone, a middle person that collects all these teeth and then sells them?
I'm really not sure.
Like teeth and salesman.
If so, yeah. Like, do they go door to door being like, bring out your teeth?
You have to walk up.
I'm the teeth collector. They have like a jaunty little hat.
You have to run by the corner of the street and someone's like, hey, you want some teeth?
Hey, you got any teeth to sell me? I'll sell them online for a good price. So you've good price.
You've told part of the context here. Part of the equation is that people sell their teeth. The part of the equation we're missing is why you want to buy those teeth and own the teeth.
Yes. So.
Yes.
It was so that I could bury them in the woods and take pictures.
Just more and more questions.
Sorry, this is not getting less creepy.
Answers are bringing more questions.
Yes. So I write a lot. And lately I've been on kind of a horror kick as far as like writing horror stories. And so I'm writing a horror story for the No Sleep subreddit, which does like horror stories, but there's a little bit of a kayfabe involved. So like people, when you're on the forum and you post a story, everybody has to pretend like it's real and respond as though it was real so it can be more interactive. Yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
What is a kayfabe?
Oh, kayfabe is a... It's a wrestling term, and I'm not really sure how I know that. Where, like, in the rink, all the wrestlers pretend like what's going on is 100% real.
Does it stand for something?
I don't know.
Is it K-F-A-B?
K-A-Y-F-A-B-E.
Keep going.
Okay. If you want to Google its origin, I actually do wonder about that.
I have to find my phone.
So there's this sort of etiquette. Where, like, you have to pretend like everything is real within this forum. So there's a little bit of, like, interactive storytelling going on where, like, people will ask questions or ask you to do certain things and they can direct the story in a certain way. So I wanted to make it even more realistic by having pictures of the event as it's going on. So my horror story is essentially this guy moves out to the country in this house in the middle of the woods, and his dog, like... digs up a pile of teeth, and he keeps finding like human teeth in little piles in the woods, and he doesn't know where they're coming from. So I thought that it'd be really neat if I had a picture of that to go along with it, to like really let people kind of just buy into this fantasy that it was like a real thing, which is a long way of saying
you bought teeth and buried
them
in the woods.
I bought teeth and buried them in the woods, yeah.
Okay, you should just leave it there so that way, like, 50 years later, some person can be like, what the heck?
I feel like the police might get called and my, like, DNA might be on them. Also, if you look too closely, like, it's... I think it's, like, pretty obvious that they're fake if you turn them around because they don't have, like, roots. It's just cut off.
I feel like fake teeth somehow makes it even weirder.
Yeah, a little bit.
So wait, so where can I buy this?
Online, man. Where can you buy literally everything else?
Okay. Asking for a friend.
Yeah, of course. It's always for a friend.
You can sell them for a lot of money in some markets.
Actually, I was looking into the comments like below that, because it sort of started out as like, I wrote this story and then it turned into like curiosity of, hey, that'd be kind of a cool idea. I wonder if they sell it online. And they did. And I, of course, looked into the comments and people are giving them like 5 stars. And like, the only one that I remember right now is like, awesome. They look super realistic. I'm using this for my costume. And I am just like going nuts picturing what kind of costume could possibly need. Like,
they're trying to give themselves like an extended grin, maybe.
Ooh, that'd be, I don't know if I like that. Maybe they're using them as like earrings. I've seen like tooth earrings, weirdly. Yeah.
So weird.
It is.
Making earrings out of body parts. I don't think people
should be
able to do.
Well, it's fake body parts.
Do you want to know about kayfabe?
Yes.
All right. In professional wrestling, and I'm reading from Wikipedia, kayfabe is the portrayal of staged events within an industry as, quote, real or, quote, true. Specifically, the portrayal of competition rivalries and relationships between participants as being genuine and not of a staged or predetermined nature of any kind. The term kayfabe has evolved to become a kind of code word for the sorts for maintaining this reality within the direct or indirect presence of the general public.
Yeah, so it's this idea that you're supposed to kind of keep up the act, even though it's not real. Which is really common for wrestling and, weirdly enough, online interactive horror stories.
So it's like mini ARGs.
So it started with professional ARG, wrestling. Yeah. There's several different theories about where it comes from. Various sources have suggested different origins for the term kayfabe, but the actual origin is not known with certainty. One theory suggests that it was derived from a word manipulation of the terms beefake or kayfabe. Designed to conceal the true meaning. Another theory claims that there actually was a wrestler called Kay Fabian who was mute. Neither claim has ever been substantiated. Another theory suggests that the term derives from the expression keep cavy from the Latin verb cavio, which means to look out for. This phrase was used throughout Britain by the Jews living in East London between World War I and World War II. Per that theory, many U.S. promoters and wrestlers at the time were Eastern European origin, and many had heavy accents, leading to the term being transformed into kayfabe. The term was first documented in a 1937 book. Oh, it's been around a long time.
I don't know there's so much history to this.
By a New York sports writer, Marcus Griffin, that described some of the behind-the-scenes aspect with professional wrestling, suggesting that the term was already in common use in professional wrestling by 1937.
I thought it was just like...
Interesting.
I thought it was just like Zoomer slang.
Yeah, I don't know how I know that. Wrestling is like really like one of those things where I'll get sucked into like videos of people explaining why certain fights are like important. And I go, oh, that's pretty cool. But then I can never...
So apparently there is this image that floats around the internet from a 1987's award show for professional wrestling.
Oh, great. Awesome.
Where there's a credit from the award show that claims the director was Kay Fabe. But clearly that's fake because, well, it may be a real credit, but the credit itself is fake because it was a term that was around way before that.
It really is. So there's it's like this it's common obviously in wrestling. But it's also common for, like William said before, ARGs, which are alternate reality games where it's like people put like out like weird advertisements or like strange forum posts that have like usually they have coded messages for people to follow. It's like this little like digital storytelling with an interactive portion, but also a lot of times like kind of a scavenger hunt.
Yeah,
some people
involves like, code breaking.
Some people like take it even farther and not really make a scavenger hunt, but make it like seem real. Like
yeah,
some people who are like create like even like major labeled albums and like get on interviews and stuff.
Or they'll pay like actors. And
there was a lot of stuff that was like an alternate reality game that was around the TV show Lost. After the first season of Lost, like in between the first season and the second season, they did this big ARG sort of out in the world where you could find like clues about what's going on in the island of Lost, in the world. And there was also a lot of alternate reality game type stuff around the movie, The Blair Witch Project, when it first came out. Because
I love Blair Witch.
That was like,
I heard they did that when
the promo for it was all like, this is real. It's real found footage. And people who watched it for the first time didn't realize, of course, it's a made up movie. But the idea was,
well, and
that this is all reality. And so,
yeah, the stuff in the movie, too, is like very much believable. Like it stretches credibility a little bit, but not too much.
But they created all this folklore around it so that when the movie sort of is in the context of this larger alternate reality thing.
It doesn't always have to be... It doesn't always have to be like a game necessarily. Sometimes it's just something to study, but like, I think it happened with like The Dark Knight and Portal 2 and Cloverfield and stuff like that.
You know where else it happened? When your sister bought some teeth and buried it in the woods. Just wanted to circle around.
Yeah, just bring it right back around. But that is to say, like, I think there's a certain appeal to like online stories like this and with that sort of like pretending it's real attitude. That like, I like stories. Like in books that are very fantastical and out there, but like online, like horror stories, I really prefer them to be more like grounded and subtle because there's that kind of like back of your mind thing where you know it's not real, but it could be.
Yeah, I love stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think like Slenderman started out as basically an ARG, right?
It started out as edited pictures.
Creepypasta, right?
Yeah, creepypasta.
Yeah, well, edited pictures and then like web series that was like made to look real. Basically.
I feel like every time I'm on this podcast, I bring up like something like weird or creepy. So I apologize that that's become like my brand.
That's all right.
Anyways, Dad, what's your news on your teeth?
How are your teeth?
Podcast.
My teeth don't have a lot of news other than that they are starting to eat a lot of sourdough bread. The biggest thing that's been going on in my life, other than, you know, work still being super busy, is that mom's brother, your uncle, like dried out some sourdough and put it into an envelope and mailed it to us. I can't remember if I talked about this last week on the podcast. I don't think I did.
Wait, which uncle?
Jeff, your uncle Jeff.
Which uncle Jeff?
It's true. You have one more than one. Her brother. She has only one brother named Jeff.
Oh, okay.
So your mom's brother, Jeff, dried out some sourdough. The origin of the sourdough, Amber, who's another brother's.
So it's just getting passed around.
Yes.
Sisterhood of the traveling sourdough starter.
I didn't realize
this,
but you can take sourdough.
Passed down for generations.
You can spread it out on a piece of parchment, really thin, dry it, and the sourdough is still alive. It's just dehydrated.
Ew.
And then he broke it up into little crumbs, put it in a Ziploc bag, and mailed it to us in a letter. And I took it out of the letter, reconstituted it, added some water, fed it with some flour, and I've been growing it. And now I have this sourdough that works really, really well.
Wait, so you get like...
And in fact, I dried it and mailed it to some of my friends today. So it's going out there in the world.
So you like get your own like pet sourdough now?
Yes.
Or pet yeast?
Sourdough is an interesting thing. Like, it's big. It's very trendy right now because everyone's sheltering in place. And the thing about sourdough, it's not that much different from other types of bread baking, but it does require a lot of time and a lot of just sort of sitting around waiting for it to develop. Mm-hmm. And that's what everyone has right now.
Everyone has a lot of time. Sourdough bread requires a lot of time and also some like nutmeg and cinnamon.
It also requires a lot of love and tender care.
Because
do you read to it?
Because
I feel like that would make it a better bread.
Yeah, we all know.
It's like
the sourdough. TVs. So it is kind of interesting because it's almost like it's alive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost, and I don't know if yeast technically is an animal or a plant.
I think it's like an organism.
What's the name of that animal material or that animal or that like organism?
Eukaryote or prokaryote?
It's like protista. Protista is like, it's kind of like the miscellaneous category, but not really.
Yeah.
It has like mildew and like slime, but stuff like
every
that.
Every sourdough is sort of unique and it has a different flavor. This one has a really kind of mild odor to it. Some sourdoughs like really has a strong odor. The bread that it makes is not very sour, but I like that. I don't like a super sour, but it's also really, really strong. Like it's very vigorous. It grows really quickly compared to a lot of other sourdoughs. So that's been a lot of fun. I've been learning how to, and I've been baking bread for a long, long time, but I don't have as much experience with sourdough, but I've been doing sourdough and my sourdough bread is getting really good. My sourdough bread game is getting good.
Really good.
I love sourdough.
I learned how to do something which I'd never figured out how to do before. And that's where you take the sourdough and you score it, is called. So you, after the final rise, when your bread is still is pretty strong, you kind of coat it with flour and then you take a razor blade and you make little slashes through the edge of the loaf. And then when it bakes it, like those like expand and it looks really pretty.
It does. Yeah. You were showing me pictures earlier and they look gorgeous.
So that's what I've been doing is baking sourdough. And it's nice because since I'm around the house all day long, even if I'm busy with work, it's like, it's the sort of thing where it might take you all day to bake a loaf of sourdough bread, but it's like, it's not really all day. It's like all day, like every half hour, every hour, you just do something for about 10 seconds and then you leave it alone and come back to it. So if you're on a conference call or you're working, you know, as long as I'm just here sitting around the house, I can make sourdough. Yeah. And a lot of people are in that same situation. So sourdough, I was reading an article about how sourdough is like suddenly everyone wants, I think part of it is because people started baking bread, but then they ran out of yeast.
Mm-hmm.
So they were trying to figure out, well, how do I bake bread if I don't have yeast? And sourdough is the answer to that.
Wait, does it not have yeast in it?
Well, it's a wild yeast. So it's yeast that just gathers from the air around it.
Oh.
And then once you get into a sourdough culture, that's a yeast, but it's not like manufactured yeast. You don't have to add yeast to it.
Well, how do you like collect wild yeast out of the air.
Well, there's different ways to do your sourdough starter. So this starter has been going for years and years. Your Aunt Amber has had it around. But there's a, you can do it yourself. You just mix flour and water and then you leave it out on the counter.
That's so weird.
And it gathers yeast from the air around it and just starts to grow.
Another way you can do it that I've heard works really well is if you have a little net and kind of catch it.
Sometimes when people do their sourdough starter, they start with a little bit of manufactured yeast. They just kind of seed it. But you can just leave flour and water out on the counter and it will develop its own sourdough.
It's weird to think about how, like, I always forget how there's, like, living, like, tiny little things, like, all around us. Like, yep. In the air and, like, all over ourselves.
Sourdough is a good reminder of that.
In your eye right now?
Oh, yeah, I can see them.
Yeah, you kind of can see the little weird dust floaties sometimes.
Are those living?
Anyway. No, whoa. I think
those are technically, maybe, like, little protein strands. They're floating around your eyeball.
Nasty.
Yeah, or, like, maybe even inside your eyeball, like, between your retina and your lens.
Well, I am, like, suddenly way too aware of all the specs I'm seeing right now.
Yeah, once you notice them, like, you cannot unsee them.
I think that's what floaters are. No, it's like...
I tried to, like, draw stuff using that.
It's like little protein strands floating around your eyeball.
Yeah, floaties is when, like, you look at a light and you can... It's a weird episode.
Kind of. Well, we're kind of weird people. A little.
Mom and I went shopping today. We left the house for the first time all week. Left the house to I hit three stores. We brought face coverings. So for the first time, this is the first time I've left the house. I know a lot of people have started wearing masks, and this is the first time I've actually done it. We have bandanas. And when I put on my bandana to go on the store, I felt like I was a bandit. I was going to go in and rob the place.
Yeah, I know.
Like, Mom and I felt like Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, you can get away with robberies so easily now.
I always think nice. That. When you see people walking around the store and they've got like a baseball cap and sunglasses and a bandana, you're like, man, a month ago I would have thought you were so suspicious.
If you just have a really
so
tiny gun,
you couldn't have got away with
no
that.
One will notice.
Like, security would be all over
it's
you.
So easy.
Yeah,
but now it's just like, oh, that's what we're doing now.
Oh, I appreciate you being safe, you law-abiding citizen. You.
And then, like, 6 months later, someone's gonna be like, hey, coronavirus is over, you don't need to still be wearing a bandana and a hat.
Yeah, who knows? People might still be doing this. I wonder, like, how much of this behavior is going to stick around.
Fashion trend.
Yeah.
I wonder. I was thinking about that on the way over here. Like, it's already a thing in parts of Asia to, like, wear a face mask if you, like, have a cold. I wonder if people are going to start doing that, like, around, like, flu season.
Yeah, maybe.
Or whatever.
Maybe it'll become part of the culture. So I hit three stores. I hit Home Depot to buy some light bulbs for my oven because the internal light bulb in my oven had burned out. And then we went to Costco and we scored some paper towels, which I was very, very happy about because paper towels have been out of stock for a long time. They still didn't have toilet paper, but they did have paper towels.
I could bring you some toilet paper.
I also got some dried mangoes and some almonds, a big bag of almonds.
Mm.
When Elizabeth saw the bag of almonds, she was like, who needs this many almonds? And I was like, you know what? Give it a week or two and those almonds are
going
to be gone.
Going through and, like, judging, like, our quantities of...
Well, I mean,
everything.
Not judge. That's a harsh way of saying
it. I have that thought a lot of times when I'm in Costco. Like, does anyone really need that much, whatever it is? You know, unless you have a commercial business like a restaurant.
Costco is so great.
You know, most of the people shopping there don't look like they're buying for a restaurant. They look like they're buying for their home. And then we went to 99 Ranch Market, which is a Chinese grocery store, and picked up some stuff. I picked up some stuff to make. Sukiyaki, a hot pot sukiyaki. That's what we're going to eat tonight. I'm very excited. It's like thin slices of beef and vegetables and mushrooms, and you, like, boil it and some noodles, boil it in a little pot, and everyone just reaches into the pot with their chopsticks and
okay, so I think that yaki means fried, right?
It just means, yeah, fry or, like, cooked, basically.
Yeah, and then ski means, wait, does it mean, like, love?
It can mean love. Is that the same yaki?
The same ski?
Sukiyaki? I'm trying to remember if it's
so
the same one.
So
it's
like fried thing you love?
Yeah, fried stuff you like, basically.
I thought it was okonomiyaki that meant.
I'm looking it up so I can see if the kanji is the same. I think it is. I think it means, like, stuff you like thrown into a pot, basically. There's two kinds of Japanese hot pot that are really popular. There's sukiyaki and there's shabu shabu. Mm-hmm. And the only difference is sukiyaki, you start with like a base of like that has soy sauce and mirin, which is like sweet rice wine and usually sake. So it's kind of got a soupy base to it first. Shabu shabu is generally just, it's just hot water.
I've had shabu shabu before.
Dashi. I think you put dashi in there. Yeah. So shabu shabu tends to be more just kind of watery and just kind of boil everything. And then as you boil stuff, it sort of takes on the flavor of whatever, whatever you put in your shabu shabu. Mm-hmm. The sukiyaki, you start with more of a kind of a briny, saucy type thing. I think I like sukiyaki just a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it's I do too.
A little sweet, a little salty.
Yeah, it's very like savory and nice. Where like shabu shabu, I've only had it once and it was a while ago, but there's a lot more mushrooms in shabu shabu too. Yeah. Which I like some mushrooms. I'm not like a huge fan of all mushrooms all the time.
Yeah. I don't like mushrooms.
I kind of like mushrooms. I like, you get the little enoki mushrooms. They're like the really thin ones.
Yeah, the little bitty ones are basically just like sprouts.
Shiitake mushrooms that have the big hats.
Them. Maybe I could use them again.
I kind of like them.
I've been playing a lot of Breath of the Wild, and cooking is like a big part of that game, and everything looks so good. Yeah. It's like, there's only like a couple ingredients you can use because it's a video game.
Yeah.
But I end up cooking like a lot of fish, a lot of meat, and a lot of mushrooms. In that game.
Yeah.
And
someone was talking about on a podcast I was listening to about a particular Japanese food that I like that they had only heard of it because of Breath of the Wild. And I don't remember what it was.
Oh, was it onigiri?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Like rice balls. Know.
Maybe. I made that for lunch the other day.
Oh, yeah. Those are good.
Yeah. Oh, man. Those look good. Yeah. That sounds good.
I've got a Maisie update.
Favorite drops.
That's my one of my favorite drops too. That's exactly what I was thinking.
The soda one's pretty good.
And I guess to be clear, I'm not 100% sure if this is a Maisie update or not. But last night when we were in bed, mom and I, it like usually we got to bed kind of late because, you know, it was a weekend. Got to bed, we were just kind of, I think we watched some TV and then really tired, close our eyes, go into bed, and mom nudges me, and I had already sort of half fallen asleep or mostly fallen asleep. You know how when you fall asleep, like, you don't really, like, you hear, like, dream noises.
Yeah, but, like, from the bottom of the pool. Yeah, it's, oh, that's actually called hypnagogia.
Hypnagogia is exactly the word that I didn't know that I wanted to use in this context.
There's actually a genre of music, sorry, this is a small, like, detour, that, like, tries to imitate the music that you hear, like, when you're slightly falling asleep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, anyway. Yeah.
And so I didn't really know if I heard anything, but mom was like, kind of, she was like, did you hear that? And I was like, I don't know. I heard stuff, but it was like dreamy stuff. I don't know. And she said that Maisie was howling really loudly. I was like, well, what do you mean she was howling? Like the way she howls when the boys are practicing their cello.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, viola.
Mournfully.
She's like, no, or? not like a musical howl, more like an angry howl.
This is getting kind of scary.
Like a really loud howl. And I said, that's strange. And then, you know, and I kind of just wanted to go back to sleep, but I could tell mom was kind of
creeped out.
And bothered. And so I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'll go check it out. You want me to check it out? And she's like, yes. And so I decided I needed to go check it out. So I turned on the light by my bed and walked out there and walked around. And Maisie seemed like she wasn't, because sometimes she'll be in her kennel. She sleeps in her kennel at night. And sometimes, like, if you go in there, she'll, like, sit up. You can see she's looking at something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But she was just laying down, kind of wrapped in her blanket. So I was like, oh, that's strange. And I checked all the doors, made sure they were locked, and kind of looked out the front window. And there was nothing going on, but I don't know. And I asked her again in the morning. I said, are you sure you heard Maisie howling? She said, yes, I'm sure I heard it. And it was either Maisie or, like, if there was, like, a siren that sounded exactly like her howl.
Do you think it might be, like, a coyote outside or something?
Or, like, another dog or something. I don't know. But it was really loud. And to her, it sounded like it was coming inside the house. Because Maisie's kennel is not that far from where our bedroom is.
Is she having, like, night terrors?
I don't know.
Is that even possible with dogs? Like, I don't... I don't know.
She's not a really loud dog either. Like, she'll howl when the boys are practicing their music. She'll bark at other dogs if she sees them, like, out the window. But for the most part, she doesn't make a lot of noise. Yeah, so it'd be unusual for her to just start howling in the middle of the night.
It's not like big dogs that would just, like, howl, like, for no reason.
So that was strange.
That's really creepy, actually.
Yeah, it was a little unsettling. Yeah. I gotta admit, like, there's something about... there's a little bit of a terror when you think, like, your home might be disturbed at night. Like, either someone came into the house, or, I don't know, just something. There's something unusual going on in the house, and you're like, I don't know. You don't want to get up and explore, because what if I did find something?
What's going to happen?
What would I do?
Yeah.
Me walking around in my underwear.
What if you go downstairs and somebody's breaking into your house looking for valuables, and now you're just like that's awkward.
Can I help you?
Yeah.
Have you ever had that thing where, like, it's late at night and, like, you look across the room to, like, a window, and, like, you're afraid that, like, someone's going to appear in the window?
Absolutely. All the time.
Like, windows from a distance at night are so creepy.
Yes. I hate having any, like, blinds or windows open at night.
Yeah.
I used to be really scared that I was going to see a clown. I don't know why or, like, why that was, like, got in my head, but, like, when I was a kid, I was, like, I would look at it, like a dark window at night, and I'd think, there's probably a clown in there. And I don't know how that thought made its way into my brain, but it, like, the closer I got to the window to close it, it was always, oh, there's definitely a clown there. He's going to look at you.
I remember thinking when I was a kid, like, if I woke up in the middle of the night and I have opened my eyes, I might see a skull face in front of me.
Mm. I had that.
I don't know what that means. Just a skull face. Like, and I would be terrified. I never saw a skull face, but I was always afraid of seeing a skull face.
In a season of Doctor Who, there's like this like lady with an eye patch that will randomly, like, it's like there's this little like sliding window that she'll like randomly close, or she'll like appear like with a white background and she'll randomly close it. Like, just her head.
You used to be really freaked out of that was going to happen.
And she could appear like anywhere. I guess she had like sci-fi powers. And so basically anywhere with walls, I was terrified of.
Yeah, Phoebe's not here, but I'm going to put her on blast anyway. When she was really little and we still, like, shared a room, she would always get, like, it was, like, my thing with clowns where, like, if she saw, like, a window at night, she was like, oh, man, I bet Lord Licorice is on the other side from Candyland. Oh my gosh. She was really scared of Lord Licorice, and I have no idea why.
I think we've talked about this on the podcast before.
Probably.
Yeah.
We had a CD-ROM game of Candyland.
Oh, yeah.
And she hated playing it because, Lord Licorice might appear.
I would like to add, CD-ROM games are a lost art. I was playing Return of the Incredible Machine before this podcast. It's a game where, like, you have to make, like, Rube Goldberg machines. And, like, some of them are incomplete, and you have to fill in the gaps and stuff. And those games are great.
Ocean Explorer was the OG. But anyway, yeah, she hated Lord Licorice for some reason. I completely forgot about the Candyland game.
Yeah.
I think because I didn't play it a lot, because it got, like, a massive scratch on it, and so it would crash, like, every 10 minutes later on, but...
Every single Nancy Drew game.
Nancy Drew games are good, too.
Some of those games are really scary, too.
Yeah, they're kind of creepy and, like, atmospheric.
Yeah, the scary ones are my favorite.
So, Maisie's being creepy.
That's all there was to it. There isn't really a follow-up to that story, but Mom thinks she heard Maisie howling in the middle of the night.
That's very creepy. That's genuinely really creepy.
We don't know why or if it actually happened.
I think it's scarier if it wasn't Maisie.
You know what? Your pet can be, like, really creepy without meaning to a lot of times. Like... I feel like this is maybe more of a cat thing, but Sasha, like, the way that cats look at things when, like, they can see something moving is, like, very distinct. Like, they'll kind of snap their head around and, like, twist their ears around and stuff. And she'll do that in, like, late at night when there is absolutely nothing in the room. Like, she'll pretend like she's watching something, and it freaks me out. It really freaks me out.
Can cats see ghosts, too?
I don't know. Maybe.
Let's do some news.
I don't really know what I'm...
Let's do some news.
Now, your tomorrow morning's headlines tonight.
I have a story from the world of science! Scientists have discovered the longest animal ever in a deep sea canyon off the Australian coast. The underwater explorers found a 150-foot long siphonophore, a translucent, stringy creature that, like coral, is made up of smaller critters living in a submarine canyon off the coast of Australia. It's seemingly the largest animal ever discovered. It's basically just a long, translucent string that is 150 feet long.
That's so weird.
And it's actually a colony of tiny zooids. Zooids? Huh. Zooids. The little zooids are born asexually. Each one performs a function for the siphonophore's larger body, according to a research article published in the Journal of Developmental Dynamics in 2005. Linked together in long chains, the colonies were already known to reach lengths of up to 130 feet, according to the Monterey Bay Aquarium. The new record-setting siphonophore, it looks like siphonophore, was one of the several discoveries made by a team aboard a research vessel, Falkor, while exploring deep-sea canyons near Australia's Ningaloo coast. The researchers used a remotely operated vehicle, or ROV, Sebastian, to explore and collect samples from the deep ocean areas that hadn't been investigated before, and the team said an emailed statement. In March, researchers using the same ROV discovered gardens and graveyards of coral in three submarine canyons off South Australia. During this latest voyage through waters off Western Australia, the researchers also discovered large colonies of glass sponges and other species. They also found the largest ever example of a giant siphonosphore genus Apolemia. So very long, skinny, stringy creature found in a deep sea canyon. Do you ever think about deep sea exploring?
Yeah, we don't know what's down there.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, there is a CD-ROM game.
Yeah.
About ocean exploring.
There is.
I know exactly what's down there. Some of my best friends are down there.
Crazy weird stuff's down there.
You're friends with the weird noodle thing we were just talking about?
Yeah, those guys are awesome.
Oh, it reminds me of that story we talked about a while back on the podcast about when they dropped alligators to the bottom of the ocean floor.
And what happened?
One of them was attacked by these like giant like scavenger material things that turned it into a skeleton like in a day.
It just brought them back.
And one of them just disappeared. Like something bit through the chain and hauled it away.
I was saying that like it sounded exactly like an H.P. Lovecraft story.
Yeah, it literally does. I always like think like we're not going to find the really freaky stuff out in space just yet. We're going to find it in the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's so...
It's mostly just rocks and space.
If it exists, it exists a very, very long ways away. Anything close by, there's just nothing... There's not conditions for life, really.
Is it bad that when I heard about this, I imagined how it would feel to like slurp it up like a long noodle?
It sort of makes you think of pasta.
Yeah, it totally does.
Or a type of noodle that I bought for our dinner tonight called a shirataki noodle. Have you ever seen those?
Our characters
maybe I'd have to look
like
at it.
It's like the little translucent noodles. Oh, that like they little have rice Japanese noodles. Food.
Yeah.
Our characters in cartoons when they eat fish, they'll like really cleanly like.
I think shirataki's actually skeleton. Made of. Shirataki's made of like on a cartoon when the cat takes the fish and
eat the fish like
and the skeleton comes out. I think shirataki's made from like miso.
Hmm.
But then there's another type called konnyaku that's made from like yams, and it just looks like good little ghost noodles. Yeah.
Well, they actually have to kill the noodle first and then extract the ghost noodle from it. Yes. It's a complicated process.
Anyone want to talk about their story?
Woman fined for taking turtle for a walk in Rome.
Oh, she's fine? That's good to hear.
Yeah. Wait, the turtle or the woman?
Yeah.
She's it not says fine.
The woman was fined.
She's fine.
Taking turtle.
Ah, she was fined.
I thought you were joking.
I was.
An Italian woman who took her pizza-sized turtle out for a walk has been fined 400 euros, or $440, by the Roman police for breaking strict coronavirus confinement rules.
Pizza-sized turtle seems like a little bit like a stereotype. They're the kind of stereotyping here.
Yeah. Don't stereotype turtles.
Italian turtles.
Italians need to.
I wonder if she was chased by the police. Walking her turtle. She was chased for a very short time.
So she was like,
they caught her.
It says, Mario, go faster. The police are after us. The policia.
The policia. It says Italians need a justifiable reason to be out on the street in the middle of a pandemic, especially. Taking your dog out for a walk is viewed as a good enough reason to leave your home, but it seems that taking out your turtle out.
So you can take a dog for a walk, but you can't take a turtle for a walk?
Speciesist.
Do turtles walk as about as slowly as tortoises, right?
I don't think there are any turtles that are super speedy.
They can swim pretty fast, I think.
So, like, do they just have to be out there, like, all day to walk their turtle?
I don't know. Any information in the story?
The woman was walking with a turtle, the police statement said.
That's it.
Yep.
Those are just the facts. Just the facts, ma'am.
Roman police spokesman, I'm not going to try to pronounce that, told AFP that the woman was fined 400 euros because it was not a justifiable excuse.
It sounded like you said 400 years.
I know it did. I was going to say that's a really long prison term for just one.
No, they had to walk the turtle.
Not for the turtle.
They had to walk the turtle for 400 years.
I think you said 400 euros.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they might have just like mistyped here. They misheard the person. Maybe the person was walking the turtle for 400 years.
It's a long time to walk a turtle. Tortoises live a long, long time. Is it a tortoise or a turtle?
It's a turtle.
I feel like turtles also live a long time. Sea turtles live for like hundreds of years.
Well, not hundreds, but I think it's like 120 years.
Tortoises can live like 100 or I want to say like 150 years.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Like those big massive land turtles.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think it would still be hard to walk a turtle 400 years. You'd have to like a multi-generational walk of that turtle.
I think a 400-year walk of a turtle would be pretty hard to do.
At some point, even the turtles have to sleep.
Yeah. Allegedly. I'm not an expert in turtle biology.
So she broke the, the stay-at-home order, and they fined her 400 euros because she wanted to take her turtle for a walk.
Yeah, it says another 13,756 fines were issued on Sunday.
Oof.
Italians have been joking on social media about renting out their dogs to anyone who's going stir crazy. An excuse to go out.
Oh, yeah. So they can't just walk around. They have to have, like, an excuse to be around.
We need to, like, make a movie about, like, an animated movie about someone who just got a dog so they can walk around during the pandemic when they learn to actually love the dog. So
we're not quite that strict around here. Like, you can take a walk because you just have to stay away from people.
Yeah.
And like, he starts renting it out to other people. Sisterhood of the Traveling Dog.
Carbone says
the second traveling sisterhood of the traveling.
Yeah, I'm on a kick. Reference, I guess,
on this podcast.
Carbone said the turtle was as big as a pizza, but not wearing a leash. I'm just walking with the turtle, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't
okay.
think leash laws really apply to turtles.
I feel like they should maybe like.
I saw a snapping
what
turtle.
What if he said the turtles are going to run off?
I saw a snapping turtle in our creek when I was walking around.
Oh, really?
The neighborhood, and snapping turtles you don't want to mess with. They're nasty.
Yeah.
They're mean.
Like salty.
A girl got
men.
Bit by a snapping turtle at a summer camp one time.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Was she swimming or did she just see it and was messing with it?
Oh no, she was swimming in the lake.
And it bit her?
Yeah. And it bit her.
Yikes. They can really hurt, I think. They got big old jaws.
Yeah, they got sharp little mouths.
Snappers.
You can like I don't feel this way about like most turtles or tortoises. Like I usually look at them and like, yeah, you're probably like chill, but snapping turtles I feel like I look into their eyes and I see like hatred. You know?
You want to give us your story, Elizabeth?
Yeah. So this one's a little, this one's about toilets.
It is about toilets. It's about toilets. Smart toilets.
Yeah.
Not your usual
so this
dumb
is one
toilets.
Of the,
this is a smart toilet.
This is about, this is I coming from the world toilet. Of science.
Science!
And this is one of those stories from the world of science where I look at it and I go, why? Why did you do this thing? You didn't have to, but you did. And I'm not really sure why.
Your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
I completely forgotten that you had that one.
Worked perfectly.
So the title of this article says, quote unquote, smart toilet recognizes users' backsides, comma, analyzes poop.
Yep.
So this is a team of Stanford University scientists, and they designed a smart toilet that it identifies the user, much like a fingerprint scanner, by bits that aren't your fingerprint. Use your imagination.
It turns out that that part of your anatomy is also unique, like fingerprints.
Yes.
So, like, why does it need to know the specific user?
Well, there is a reason.
Evil.
There is a reason. I read this article. There is a reason to want to identify each person using the toilet.
That's true. Although I do like to like remember back to when like fingerprint scanners were becoming like common in phones, and a bunch of people were like, Bill Gates is going to collect that information for, I don't know, Illuminati purposes. And I like to believe there's somebody out here very paranoid about like people's butt prints.
I don't want people to know my, to have my butt print. That's personal.
That's my personal information.
It does seem even more personal. It really, seems, if you think about it.
Even worse. Yes. It seems even worse, but we're going to try a little bit hard not to think about that.
So tell us why they want to identify each person.
Okay. Anyway, so this article doesn't actually say why it wants to identify you by your butt print. However,
it does. It does because it's gathering medical information about you.
Yes. Okay. So that does.
Yeah. So,
It
will analyze the poop and the pee for medical conditions. And so it has to know like whose medical condition it's analyzing and keep track of.
I guess that does make sense. That it has to like keep like a running track.
So if different people are using the bathroom, like it's going to collect different information. Whoa,
you're all over the place. Yeah. So yes, it does this for health reasons is the reason they did it. Although I still question maybe what the inspiration for this, where that came from, where the idea came from. It also says that it evaluates, quote, flow rate, stream time, and total volume, which I don't know about you guys. I would feel a little bit weird about, like, I was starting to feel insecure. Like, am I peeing for too long?
Or you might feel competitive. Like, I'm trying to set a new record here.
It's a sport.
23 seconds.
Like a line graph.
Beat that. I know.
Well, like in farming, you try to get like the biggest pumpkin or whatever.
Oh no! So, like, oh, it's an Olympic sport now.
They should play us at the Olympics. They just can't show any footage.
I'm a little disappointed in myself for how the direction this was taken in.
Elizabeth and William are on the podcast together. That hasn't happened in a long time, and I thought it might be a good opportunity to do a segment we have not done in a while. I would like to do some made-up movie minutes.
Yes, I was hoping.
And I've got a list of movies here. These are movies that were supposed to be released but got delayed because of the pandemic.
Mm.
I've got some movie titles. Do you want me to just read off the movie titles and you can pick one or two or three?
Sure.
All right.
I get my timer up here. So the way this works, we've done this before, is I give you just the movie title. And then you guys have, let's say, a minute and a half to just make up a plot for this movie. And when the minute and a half's over, I will read you the actual movie plot and we'll compare like how your movie compares to the actual movie. But here are some movies that were supposed to be big releases that were delayed because of the pandemic. We have Monster Hunter, Last Night in Soho, The Tomorrow War, Vivarium, and The Woman in the Window. Any of those grab you?
Tomorrow War.
Woman in the Window kind of sounds cool.
We'll do The Tomorrow War first, and then you can do The Woman in the Window. All right. You guys ready?
All right.
It starts now.
Okay.
So it's about this group of soldiers, and they're like... there's two groups and they're like on the battlefield, but they keep putting it off. They're like, oh, maybe we'll fight tomorrow, right? Like let's call it off for today. I mean, it's already like noon and we've slept in. So
and the government keeps on doing all this preparation for like what they think will be this grand battle, but like they never know when it will happen. It could be today or it could be tomorrow.
Yeah, it could be tomorrow.
Keep on preparing for the future, but like it's a future that seems to never happen, and it's causing all this paranoia and controversy in the town.
Yeah. And they like keep making like bigger and bigger weapons. Wait, this is just the Cold War. We made up the Cold War.
But it turns out that it was actually aliens manipulating them and just causing all this paranoia.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
And once they figure that out,
they agree to fight the aliens tomorrow.
But the aliens start to control them. The aliens start to like get advantage of them. And before they start to do anything, the movie ends on a to be continued.
Uh-huh. And the end credit scene teases the
Today
aliens.
War.
the Today War, and features a subplot about aliens falling in love.
It's this like gigantic like M. Night Shyamalan twist towards the end that like it was aliens.
It was aliens the whole time.
And they're coming for us.
And you know what?
They were
a step ahead of us. It's pretty lame, actually. Everybody was disappointed.
Oh yeah, it sucks. It's completely out of nowhere. It's like this weird like tone shift.
And that is the end. That is the Tomorrow War. Do you want to hear what the actual plot summary is?
All right. Probably nothing.
Ours is better.
A man is drafted to fight in a future war where the fate of humanity relies on his ability to confront his past. It is apparently a sci-fi movie starring Chris Pratt, Yvonne Strahovski, and J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons.
He plays the alien?
I don't know. I don't know if there are any aliens.
There may be aliens.
It sounds like the possibility of aliens.
Is this an animated movie or...?
They're being drafted to fight in a future war where the fate of humanity relies. I don't know. No, it's a live action movie. Some kind of sci-fi war movie. All right. And then you wanted to do The Woman in the Window. So I'm going to set the timer again. I think you guys, did you need the whole hour, minute and a half, or should we shorten this to just a minute?
Minute and a half should be good. I felt like that was...
All right. Here we go. The Woman in the Window.
So there's this man who like... hears about, like, all the people are talking about this creepy old mansion where if you go inside, then you can always see a woman from the window. And everyone's terrified about it, but the protagonist figures out that actually falls in love with the...
I was going to say that he falls in love. It actually turns into a rom-com halfway through.
But all the kids still see it as a scary ghost lady.
Yeah, and it's more like accepting your stepmom type of story. So it's like halfway.
Wait, is it a stepmom or is it a romantic?
Well, he gets married pretty quickly to this ghost. And it's like very much like, but dad, how can I accept her as my real mom when she keeps being a poltergeist? She keeps showing up in the mirror behind me and it's like, aw, champ, she's just trying to help you comb your hair. And it's like, I wish she had like all of her organs still.
And all his friends keep on saying, hey, we want to track down this ghost and contain her and put her in some lab facility. And he almost allies with his friends.
But then he realizes, nah, you're cool. You're my real mom all along. But the bullies come to his house and the movie ends, or the next part of the movie is like a Home Alone, like, trap segment, except she
and
like...
she freaking kills his friends.
She kills his friends and they become ghosts.
Axe.
Well, and they become ghosts too, which makes the whole thing really awkward.
So now it's this giant ghost battle, and I don't know how you kill a ghost, but in this movie, there's a second afterlife.
Apparently that's going to have to happen
ghost
in the sequel.
Ghosts.
That one took a lot of twists and turns.
It really did.
Started out as a horror movie, moved into a rom-com, became a family drama, and then back to a horror movie.
Home
at the
Alone?
End.
Yeah.
Impressive. A lot of range there.
I feel like it could win an Oscar.
The Woman in the Window is a movie about an agoraphobic woman living alone in New York who begins spying on her new neighbors only to witness a disturbing act of violence.
Wait, I saw the trailers for this. It looked pretty good. Did it have Amy Adams?
Amy Adams is the star.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It kind of sounds like a Rear Window type.
Yes, exactly.
Scenario.
This sounds interesting.
It looks like
actually.
A pretty good movie, yeah.
Except like the woman that she saw being murdered like actually wasn't the wife after all. I don't know.
I don't know.
Good.
It seems like it's very much, it sounds like a reworking of Rear Window if you've ever seen that.
Totally.
With Jimmy Stewart and Grace
Kelly.
Yeah. But sounds pretty good. Don't know when it's going to come out because it's been delayed due to the pandemic. Some of these other movies that are out, Monster Hunter is based on a Capcom video game.
Oh my god.
That
by the director Paul W.S. Anderson, who did all of the Resident Evil movies, and it stars his wife, Mila Jovovich.
That's a heck of
a name.
It's
basically like fighting giant monsters. Last Night in Soho is the new Edgar Wright movie.
Mm. Oh, really? I didn't know he had a new movie coming out.
Yes, that's been delayed. Vivarium is about a young couple looking for a perfect home in a trapped in a mysterious labyrinth-like neighborhood. That I saw that trailer a while ago, and it seems like a weird, strange movie. So I don't know. I don't know when these movies will come out, if they come out at all. Maybe they'll be delayed, or maybe they'll just release them on direct-to-video. One of the movies that's being released direct-to-video, it's going to go to Disney Plus. It was supposed to be a big box office movie.
Onwards?
Artemis Fowl.
Mm.
They made a movie out of that?
It was a movie, and it was supposed to be a big Disney release, but it's going to go straight to Disney Plus because they just couldn't do the theatrical release.
Kept on seeing those like cardboard posters for that for like I swear, like a year now.
Yeah. Huh. Well, there's only one last thing to do on the podcast, and that is
three words for you: treat yourself.
Treat yourself.
Treat yourself.
Elizabeth brought us some treat yourself treats.
Yeah, I was going grocery shopping and I found this, and I thought, that's perfect for treat yourself.
Henry's going to join us for treat yourself.
Yeah, come.
As he does sometimes. And then we'll also have one treat that I picked up today at 99 Ranch Market. So we'll start with Elizabeth's treats.
Hello, I'm back.
Hey, hello. It's Henry. Say hi, Henry.
Hi.
We've got some Oreo chocolate Easter candy. We've got some Dr. Pepper cotton candy. Mm-hmm. And we have fruit mochi from 99 Ranch Market. Mm. It says on the bag, amazingly yummy. Amazingly yummy.
Pretty good.
That's a pretty high.
That's a lot to live up to.
Yeah.
So I think they've set the bar pretty high. What should we try first? The Oreo chocolate candy Easter candy?
I feel like the Oreo chocolate candy Easter candy is... I think I know what to expect.
All right.
From that.
Yeah.
Let's try that one first.
Will it be as good as the most stuffed Oreos?
Yes.
Probably the least suspense. I think I might have had a similar candy to this once. Like, there's like a chocolate bar that's Oreo chocolate bar.
This is like the most normal similar of them.
What do we think of the Oreo chocolate candy?
Not that much different from the like Oreo chocolate bars.
The candy bar. Just a little more Cadbury. Fun size version of that.
Yeah, pretty much exactly what you'd expect.
Yeah.
Yum, yum, yum. Delicioso.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we've already had these before, but just like a bigger version of this.
Yeah. It's just like slightly less like Cadbury tasting.
I'm going to give it just an okay because I'm not a super huge fan of... I'm not like a huge fan of this kind of candy, like the cookies and cream.
It's awfully sweet.
Stuff. It's really sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's really sweet.
You know what you're getting. It's a chocolatey candy. It's, you know, it's pretty good. I don't know what to expect about this. The Dr. Pepper cotton candy.
Yeah. I saw that in the store and I was like,
Ooh, it smells off.
I feel like it's going to be good, but I feel like it's also going to be an abomination.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll pass around. Everyone can try a little bit.
It's either going to be like awful and a crime against nature, or it's going to be like surprisingly good.
And a crime
the
against nature.
The color is a little
unsurprisingly
scary.
Unsurprisingly good. Yeah.
Personally, I get that delicious, but it is a crime against humanity, and it's honestly a little fizzy. It has that fizzy flavor.
It goes from doing... Wait, fizzy flavor?
Or fizzy feeling, whatever.
It goes from being like... All right, I guess, then to being really good, and then to kind of being all right again and kind of gross.
It's not as bad as I feared it might be, but I taste a little bit of a, you know, that chemically red food dye?
Yeah.
It's got a little bit of that going on.
Oh,
yeah. If it weren't for that, I'd call it delicious. Because of that, I'd say it's just okay.
I guess I'll give it like a medium okay. I guess. That's weird.
One thing about this is like the color. It very much gives you the forbidden snack feeling of like eating like insulation, like the pink insulation that they put in between like walls. Like that's just fiberglass. Yeah. So that is satisfying in that way.
It's like that, but a little more gory. It definitely has that like this is something artificial created in a lab type thing. Like this is not a natural food by any means.
I'm going to give it a disgusting gross.
Ew. Seriously?
That is so gross.
Because the flavor is like so like cherry cough syrup. It is exactly cherry cough syrup for me.
Oh,
that's disgusting.
I can't untaste that now.
Dr. Pepper kind of has that going on already, but yeah.
I'm changing mine to a meh.
And I like Dr. Pepper, but it...
Meh. M-E-H. Meh.
I'm still saying delicious, because I don't have the same PTSD about cough syrup as you.
That's that's fair, yeah. Some people say that root beer tastes like cough syrup to them, but I love root beer, so I'm fine with it.
All right. This says the fruit mochi. It is from Yuki and Love, or Yuki no Koi. On the top of it, in Japanese, it says, it has the strong smell of fruits, or the strong flavor of fruits.
This looks really good.
I love mochi already, but I usually eat like red bean or sesame flavored mochi.
So it comes in three flavors, strawberry, mango, or grape. I'd say just pick one because I don't think we have time to do all three of them on the podcast. What do you guys think of the fruit mochi?
It's really good.
It's pretty good.
But also, I kind of feel like my mouth just has, like, an automatic bias against artificial flavoring now after having that Dr. Pepper cotton candy.
Does it taste artificial to you?
It does.
And once I realize the artificial flavoring tastes like medicine, like, I'll give it Delicious, I think.
I mean, everything tastes like
yum, 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 yum. Delicioso.
I'm a little confused about why it has Japanese on it, but it is says it's a product of Taiwan. Maybe it was produced in Taiwan for Japan. I don't know.
Who knows?
But beyond that, I don't know. I feel like amazingly yummy is a little bit of an exaggeration here.
Yeah.
It's I think pretty pretty good.
I really like
but
mochi.
I'm not sure if it's that good. I'm going to
call
it okay.
The texture is really good.
Yeah.
I think it's very soft
mochi.
And chewy.
But the texture mochi. Is like, or the flavor, I mean, is like really artificial. But I liked it, so I'm going to go with Delicious. Yeah.
Okay.
Just because I love mochi so much.
All right. Well, that is Treat Yourself, and that is our podcast. Thanks for being on the podcast, William and
thank you.
Elizabeth. Thanks, Henry,
thank
for joining us for Treat Yourself.
Thank you.
And thank you that to everyone who's listening. If you are listening, let us know. You can tweet us at TTD Podcast on Twitter. You can email us at talktodadpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us at Talk to Dad Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And you can find us at talktodadpodcast.com, where you can download and stream all of our episodes from 1 to 196. If you like us and you want to help us out, there's two things you could do. One, you can tell a friend. And two, you can leave us a 5-star review. If you subscribe, rate, or review us, wherever you find the podcast, that helps us to get the word out and helps other people maybe be able to find the podcast as well. So we appreciate everyone who's done that. This has been a lot of fun, and we will see you later. There's time for